Oh, yes. Stanley Turrentine on tenor sax takes the lead on this tune called Jubilee Shout. It's the title track of his 1962 album. Did you hear that? 1962. And he did this album for Blue Note. Brother Tommy Turrentine is on trumpet. Sonny Clark is on piano. Kenny Burrell is on guitar. Butch Warren is on bass. And Al Harewood is on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And today it's part two of the conversation we started yesterday, in which we covered a lot of ground. And for me, it was quite moving, very emotional, and very sincere in terms of what people were feeling and communicating. And it had to do with the fact that in the United States, we're always running on parallel tracks, or sometimes intersecting tracks. But the parallel tracks don't meet. They're just a parallel. They go on for mile after mile after mile. And it's as if there are two different worlds concerning two different or very different points of view and feelings and concerns. And we are in that mode right now. We're told, of course, if you watch the news, we're told, well, these are the stories. The stories have to do with the Trump administration, COVID-19, COVID, the new COVID virus. There are issues that they define as I'm talking about are the news people, news organizations. And we are supposed to fall in line and fill it out for them. But that has never been my experience. And that has never been my approach. News is news. And the manufacturing of news and news issues and news values is a long time U.S. industry. They decide what the big headlines ought to be and what we, as the consumers of news, what we ought to concern ourselves with. Of course, we know that a whole bunch of other things are occurring in our world that to us are very, very important, sometimes more important than what they define as the news of the day. And here we are again at such a juncture where the news is defined for us. They tell us what they see are the news headlines that we, if we're smart, if we're savvy, we will lock into ourselves. And so we talk to each other about issues they raise as the main issues of the day. But in America, this has always been the story. What a large chunk of America considers news, the news media that just don't get it. They don't consider these things news. And they tend to ignore these developments and these issues and concerns by millions and millions of people. And yesterday we began a discussion on one such topic. And it is a subset of many questions and issues. They're all raised in the same context, but for us it's the same story. For example, What would you say is your analysis or assessment of where we are as a nation? And what is your place in it? You will live until you die, as my mother would say. You would live until you die before a question like this is posed to you. What is your analysis or assessment of where we are as a nation, and what is your place in it? This is according to you. You are defining yourself and defining your role, defining your life within the context of what people consider America to be. What is your sense of identity as an American? Do you feel you belong here? Or is your identity fragmented and divided? That's a very deep question, but you will never get asked that question.
So I think you got where I was going, and I'm interested in what your response is today from where we pick up from yesterday. What is this thing that we are feeling that we are reluctant to express? What is it? And why are we reluctant to express it? What makes us so uncomfortable about our identity as Americans? Have you figured it out? Let's hear you at 888-874-4888. Gwen from New York, you're the first one up today.
I'm so glad, because I missed the show yesterday. My cat got sick. He had to go to the hospital. Okay. But I listened to it last night, and I wanted to say, I heard something the other day on Bonnie Faulkner by Dr. Michael Rechtenwald. And it was exactly what I wanted to hear, and so many of my questions were answered about this. So in a way, I think that what we need to do is to ask ourselves a question about the world, not just the United States. Because from the inception of this virus, everybody's been asking ourselves, you know, if it is a man-made virus, then what is the purpose of it? Why are they doing it? And I also want to say that even if it's man-made, doesn't mean it's not real. It's real. It will kill you. But anyway, when I heard this the other day, and what this gentleman was talking about was basically not bringing the third world countries up to first world status, but bringing all the first world countries down to third world status. Everybody goes down there. And then after that happens, the oligarchs that are running the show, they never move their status at all. They stay exactly where they were. It baffled me when I heard Jeff Bezos go into space and say to his workers, thank you so much because you paid for it. I couldn't imagine there weren't a million people at his door, like, trying to smash it in for such arrogance. But that's the level of power that these people think they have over the whole world. And so when I kept looking at this, I kept thinking, the virus is not just here in the United States. It's all over the world. They're doing exactly the same thing. France closed down just before New York. I have a friend who lives in France who told me he can no longer go to the supermarket. And so I think what's happening here is it's called the Great Reset. I would really ask people, because I can't remember everything, to please Google it. It was on Guns and Butter. You have to go to Bonnie Faulkner's website and listen to this, Dr. Michael Rechtenwald. And he breaks it down in such clarity and such understanding. So what we have here is not really a disease or a vaccine. It's just a way of gaining control of the world population. And it's going to happen at the hands of the oligarchs. And a lot of it's already happening, of course. And they're going to use a lot of left-wing rhetoric to get their ideas passed. And so, you know, the speaker reminds us to remember that this isn't a left or right issue. What this is an authoritarian issue, and they want to bring this kind of authoritative government down throughout the world. And how do I feel about
all that you're saying, Gwen? I don't think you're actually addressing the question.
Okay, so I will just answer the question for me personally. I was getting to that. I'm sorry. Me personally, I feel very afraid. I mean, afraid to the point where I can't sleep at night. I am afraid because I'm an activist and I know I have an X on my back. I'm afraid because I got a letter from the 92nd Street Y the other day that told me that no one is allowed in that building again unless you have the vaccine. So I had just, you know, got my scholarship. I was ready to go. I had been going, but it was really scary when I got there too, because when you get there, you're greeted at the door by all kinds of security. And the security is not about, you know, you being a terrorist. Security is about, do you have this disease? I also feel afraid because when I was listening to Gary Noll today, I heard that the people that have the vaccine are the ones who can give it to the people that don't have the vaccine. And my father called me last night, and he begged me to get the vaccine. My sister and my sister took my mother and father over and had them both get the vaccine, even though my father didn't want it. And now I'm afraid to go visit them because I'm afraid of being in a closed-in quarters with people that have had the vaccine and I have not. So me personally, I am really, really terrified of what's happening. And I'm terrified when I hear weak people like Bill de Blasio all of a sudden become this, you know, this Superman of the hour, proclaiming in such an arrogant way that he did the best he could with us. And now they're coming to get us. And, you know, I really think they are going to come to get us. And it's pretty scary living anywhere, but especially in New York, to know that you cannot go work anymore. You cannot go to a job. You can't even enter the door of a retail store unless you have a vaccine. You can't go to a grocery store as of September the 13th. You can't go to the gym. The only place you can go is outside. I'm going to have to ask my friend to go food shopping for me because I won't be able to go in a grocery store. I mean, and this isn't just happening here. It happened already in France. So it's going to happen worldwide. There is an agenda. And as I said, I think that if everyone were to listen to this man, just listen to his idea of what's going on, it might give us some clarity. But I'm also afraid because what can we possibly do against a force of all governments at the same time saying unanimously, this is the way it's going to be, all of you. And what are they going to do to the people that don't get the vaccine? And I'm so tired of being spoken to on WBAI, on all these radio stations. Like I heard David Rothenberg on WBAI calling us lunatics the other day and right-wingers. I'm not a lunatic, and I am sure as hell not a right-winger. I have listened to the science, and I'm sorry. I just can't say that putting something into my bloodstream that has a spike at the end of it is probably a good thing for me down the road. There is longevity in my family, and if the planet holds up, I'll probably go into my 90s in a good way if I don't poison myself with this. And I do think that people have died from it. So I am terrified of it. I'm also terrified of it, Utrice, because as I've told so many before, my nephew is autistic, and nobody gives a damn about the autistic kids that all took those vaccines and all got sick, and it all comes down on the family. So my first point of view when this came out, my opinion was formed from what happened to my nephew, Matthew. And then what happened to our entire family after that? It caused divorce. It caused all kinds of heartache. We still don't have my sister's husband died. I mean, people don't understand that just from one thing like this, how everything can just go off the rails. And if the government
you've taken us off from where we were. I don't mind it. But you need to be aware of that. We were discussing.
As I'm talking, I'm kind of forgetting the rest of the question, too. But I just basically wanted to chime in there. You had so many great speakers yesterday. And I wanted to just say that I'm with you, and I feel just as afraid as you do. And I'm afraid of what it's going to be like to, I don't know where I'm going to work. Right now, I have to think of things that I can do by myself. I have to think of ways of making money where I don't go inside and to start generating a living that's totally different than any other thing I did in my life. I'm trying to see it in a positive way, like God gave you a kick in the ass, so now you have to do something on your own. But it's pretty scary, you know? I mean, I am really scared to try to venture out and create a new business. I've never had my own business in my life, but it looks like I'm going to have my own business because I don't see any other way of me working anymore in the places that I used to work. I worked retail my whole life. I mean, I can't go to Bloomingdale's. I can't go to Saks. I can't go anywhere. I don't even know as a makeup artist if somebody would allow me to come into their wedding party and do a makeover for weddings, you know? So it's terrifying, and it's terrifying to me to the point where I'm losing sleep over it. I'm so scared.
Well, I understand the anxiety of it, because it is an enormous challenge before everybody, and we have to grapple with it. But at the same time, we shouldn't be immobilized by fear. We should be thinking strategically. And that's what you just have to calm down enough to be strategic about it.
Right. Right. You know, well,
Thanks for calling and getting us started. You have to move
more information.
All right. Thank you. Thanks a lot. Ed from Queens, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, Teresa. How are you doing?
Okay, Ed. How are you?
Oh, what can I say? Me and my thumbs hanging in this interesting time. to bring it back to what you were talking about initially as far as American identity and what I believe your question was, what do you personally feel your American identity is and what the direction this country is taking. Personally, I'm an American. My American identity is I feel good about it. I have a history. I prescribe to ADOS, American Descendants of Slaves. I believe that my ancestors helped build this country and make it the superpower that it is. I am not aligned with the government. I haven't been aligned with the government since I became aware of what the government is. And that's been for almost the past 30 years. And what is expressed the government should be and what the government is. So I do not align myself with the government, but I align myself with the concept of America and the country. My people put their blood, sweat, and tears in this country. And this is my country. So, I mean, I'm not the over patriot, but I'm an American. I don't know any other place. I don't care to know any other place. This is where my family comes from. This is where my people were born, lived, and died. And this country owes me a debt. And I do everything I can and associate with those who do everything we can to make sure that debt is paid at some time in the not too distant future, hopefully. The direction this country is going, you know, everyone is concerned about the virus. Everyone is concerned about the Great Reset. I also am familiar with Dr. Richtenwald. I've read his book and heard the interview he did on Guns and Butter. And he does have some compelling points pertaining to Klaus Schwab, the IMF, even Bill Gates and the CDC. There are a lot of tie-ins. It's difficult to follow because, like I said before, some forces appear to be working against each other. But if you look at the big picture, which takes time and research, they're all working towards what appears to be a common goal. But it's hard to nail anything down because everything ties into everything else, and it takes a lot of research and a lot of pulling apart so you can really get an idea of what's going on. But I do believe this is some type of population control motive. I do believe that there is an agenda behind all of this. Excuse me. And the best way you can resist it is to try, my personal opinion is to take care of your local space. Try to get involved in your local government. Try to get involved in what's going on in your community and what's going on in your neighborhood. Because that is the only place, my experience, I've seen results. I've seen concrete things that can lead to a movement. But we're in for some stormy weather. We're in for some stormy weather, and You got to be up for it.
Well, you told us what your sense of identity is as an American, but is being American important to you and your identity?
Yes, it is important to me. What my ancestors did or were forced to do in this country by the compulsion of slavery and after by the restrictions of Jim Crow and convict leasing, I take pride in that. We overcame. Well, African Americans are special people because we are the only people that I know of in recent history that a government and a society set up definite plans to destroy, and we survived it. And I take pride in that. From convict leasing to redlining to segregation to from Plessy versus Ferguson to the Dred Scott decision, these were designed by government and by society to destroy a people, and we're still here. And I take pride in that. I take a strength in that. And I believe that that perseverance, that uniqueness, that strength will prevail in the long run.
Hmm. Well, thank you. Thanks very much for your analysis today and your contribution. 888-874-4888. We're having a special conversation in a special time. And we're asking special questions and getting special answers, as you can tell. Brother David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. I'm going to get right to the point. And my point is, as I look at this situation that we have here in these United States of America, the ruling class has achieved fantastic things for itself. They are winning, and they are doing wonderfully. They have tamed the people, and they have gotten more economically wealthy. They have put the people in check in terms of getting the people who are working to produce well and increasing their financial situation for themselves and flatlining or near flatlining the growth of the economy for the people. They have put the unions in check. The number of union members have gone down precipitously. They have been able to accumulate more and more wealth. So the ruling class is winning. This is a place where the policy of the ruling class internationally is imperialism and keeping the vassal countries, which are most of the countries in the world, in place and doing what they have to do to get their resources for free or near free, and that is physical resources and human resources. So this is a fantastic thing. There are no more communists around to contend with them as in the 30s and 20s and so forth. They defeated them. As I say, they defeated the unions. They are doing well. So this is a country that is in full control by the ruling class. They have the Congress completely tamed. You have no democracy there when you have a situation where you have something called campaign contributions, where you have something called people who go and lobby for different things, and what the ruling class does. They have a leader in a one-party state with two divisions. You have the Republicans and on the right, and you have the left of those Republicans that are called the Democrats. So you have two Republican parties, and that's just where those who rule want it to be. The government is controlled by the financial industry. It is not controlled by the people. The people in Congress are just concerned with their benefits, their six-figure salaries, and all the benefits they get. And if they don't follow the leader, the Nancy Pelosi or Schumer, they can be easily put out by any kind of challenge, primary challenge and whatnot. So the thing is completely fixed. And this is a good example of this ruling class, how successful they are by their usual routine of divide and conquer. They got all the little people fighting against each other, the little white people against the so-called black people, everything based on phenotype. And they're laughing at all of this nonsense that's going on among the masses of people who are not benefiting like the ruling class and the big corporations and at the top of the pile who are running the country. The country is not run by the people. It is run by the ruling class, and we have to get it. And if we want to have any change, we have to have a situation where people will have a direct democracy. You can't have a democracy in the setup that we have now. The place was never, 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 never designed to be a democracy when those people vote the Constitution. So we have to understand that the ruling class is winning. And the only way that we're going to make that change is when the people rebel. And the ruling class is very shrewd. So anytime that looks like a rebellion, they're going to throw out a couple of bones, and maybe some of them will have some meat on it. So that's the way I see it, that we are losing, the ruling class is winning, and we need to do something about it.
Okay. Thank you very much. 888-874-4888. We're talking about our identity, our sense of identity in the United States of America at this time. What is our sense of identity? Does it matter anymore to us? Do we have a special understanding of what that sense of identity compels us to do? Do we have a sense of history about it? Or is it a thing to study for the moment until we get out of this hole and we can go on for a little bit before we fall into another one? What is this identity that we have then? If Brother David is telling us that we have such fragmentation in the United States, do we dare contemplate anything as a movement? Do we dare do that? Or are we kidding ourselves into thinking that we can come together to achieve common goals? Or is that already taken care of? In other words, the division of labor here is that the elite will do the work of figuring out what needs to be done, and then the poorer people will do it, get them to do it. And that requires them to develop a special kind of American identity. You're talking now about God and country. You're talking about the responsibility you have as a citizen of this nation to protect it, to see to its growth, to tend to it. You know, we started off with Gwen, and she was talking about, you know, how troubled she is with her current situation. And everybody could understand that. But when you ask her to say, well, what is it exactly that you see? And she could give you, you know, the landscape, the big landscape, the big picture, but can't quite figure out how it translates to the one-on-one. And that's where we are right now, I think. We're getting the one-on-one message. We're getting instructions as to how, on a one-on-one basis, we contribute to the whole. Have you gotten that message? Are you fulfilling your role and your duty as an American, a good law-abiding American, a good nationalist American, to do what you must do to help the country in its national identity, which has nothing to do with you and me? That is formulated separately. Our job is to fall in line and carry out the implicit duties that we are assigned. Gamba from Florida, you're on the air.
Greetings to all. I think your question falls under the banner of status. And I see my status as a child of the universe. Why? Because once we adhere to these different symbologies and flags, we put ourselves in a box called tribalism. And as such, tribalism requires a commitment to this one tribe idea. And the one tribe idea is that every other tribe is less than. And that's my answer to your question.
But it isn't really an answer. It's a concept that you're promoting.
Okay. Well, how do I feel? I feel that beholding to this land that I have been given so much opportunity in, I'm grateful, very grateful. It has allowed me to travel the universe, or the globe, I should say, Earth, free of charge in many ways, while working. And it allowed me to see beyond the realm or the confines of Trinidad and Tobago and beyond the United States also. So I am ambivalent, or what should I say, nuanced about where I am located here on this particular cardinal point, or whatever point of reference you want to call it, United States. And going and elaborating on my phenotype being one of more African persuasion. I know I have mixed blood in me from Trinidad, but when we see the people that are so beholden, oh, I'm African American, and they have a debt to be paid. They have a debt to be paid globally for African people and indigenous peoples of the South and wherever, and the North. So that debt is just not the African Americans. And when we segregate ourselves like that, we just allow this bigger, more powerful boot. You're giving him more credence to do what they continue to do over all this time. When George Bush wanted to go into Iraq, he went and get the coalition of the forces and brought all the people together to adhere to what his agenda, the Washington agenda was. He didn't hold back and say, well, it's just us. No, he went and get all the forces. So, as people of African persuasion, if we don't understand our status is a global status rather than just a pigeonhole status of the United States or Trinidad and Tobago or Jamaica, all of these smaller confines, we lose the battle. So, I am nuanced. I see myself as a child of the universe.
How does this child of the universe reconcile the fact that you would have to look long and hard for other children of the universe? They're not there. They're not yet developed.
I do that by attracting those within my sphere of influence. If I could get one person, I've done my job. I can't look for the masses. I have to do it like the idea of how you treat the cockroach. You spray one, he goes back to the nest and he infects the other. And simply and subtly, I don't have the financial wherewithal to dedicate that much time to espousing my idea to others and see or find people of like mind and gather with them all the time. I still have to work.
Is your plan a practical plan?
Is it practical?
Yes.
I think it is, because all of us have to put food on the table and pay the light bill and the water bill and all these other human necessities. I listen to your show almost every day. Almost every day. I dedicate that time and listen to Gary Noll every day and other things too and on the PRN network. When I was in New York, I listened to WBAI, and that's how I know about you and Gary. And when I lived in Washington, D.C., I did the same thing. And I found one little means to espouse my ideas. It's through WhatsApp, the social media platform, and other little ones. We share information and pass it on. And those who are willing to adhere to it, good. Those who are not, and you know, voice their differences, hey, you know, I still send it. I can't, you know, go beyond that. I still have to work and make a living and see about my kids, or my children, I should say. I don't have kids. Kids are for goats, as Malcolm said. I just try to be practical like that. It works for me.
All right. Well, thank you so much for contributing today to our discussion. Thank you. E from Edgewater, you're on the air.
Dinner and your treats. I'm glad to hear you're doing well.
I'm hanging in, just like everybody else.
Yeah, it's pretty tragic. Well, I hate to say it, but I think we have ourselves to blame for the predicament that we're in now, because we went along with all their ideas that were supposed to be good for us. You know, when they said, you got to go to Vietnam to fight and kill people to protect our country from communism. Well, we had two choices. You either go and do and break the commandment of thou shalt not kill, or you say, no, I'm not going to go. Put me in jail. Jimi Hendrix went. He went to Vietnam. Muhammad Ali, he said, no. How come we can't all be like Muhammad Ali? He chose jail rather than go murder somebody. How come we couldn't all do that? We've been tricked from the start. You know, they say we're a free country. How did we decide that we're free people? They said, oh, look, we got these people that have black skin. We can brutalize these people and make these people slaves, and we'll say, this is what a slave is. They work, they work, they work, and even though they do good work, we still whip them at night, and we lynch them, and we burn them, and we beat them, and we do all these things to them. And why do we do that? So the people that aren't being treated like that, most of them white, think that they're free. Because a person that's a slave gets treated brutally. And a person that's free, who wakes up at the crack of dawn and works till the sun goes down like a dog, they don't consider themselves a slave because they're not being brutalized like these black people are. Those are the slaves. We are free. You see how they play the game? You see how they tricked us into believing something that was an illusion, that wasn't true? You see how they sacrificed a whole group of people just because the color of their skin was different than other people? Do you see what they're doing to us, people? We cooperated with everything they wanted us to do. We went to the schools. We should have been like the Native Americans and sat down and said, you got two choices. I'm not going to work for you. You can either kill me right now or leave me alone. And that's the choice. Kill me now or leave me be. Let me live. All right, so we wiped them out. We slaughtered them. And the rest, and whoever left off was left over went into reservations. Well, that's what's going to end up happening to us anyway. If the grid goes down, you're not going to be able to stay in your house. And if they do it on purpose, well, who's to say this virus wasn't done on purpose? It's all speculation. We're believing in the press that we know has been lying to us for the last 400 years at least, and we keep believing in them. And we're assuming that they're telling us the truth. Well, what if what they're telling us is all lies and what I'm saying is true? That's what people have to wake up. I don't know what to do to help people. I talked about this before the virus came. I said we're at war. They're using weather warfare, biological warfare, psychological warfare, all on us. And we think it's Mother Nature's making these fires and Mother Nature's making these floods and all that. No, they're manipulating the weather. And Lyndon Johnson said that all the way back in 1960s. And it's now 2021. So what are we thinking? I don't know what else to say, Eutrice.
Well, you said what you wanted to say with great passion. We all heard you. Now, the question is whether we listened to you. Two different things. Did we listen to what you had to say? We will know. We will know. Thank you, Eve, for calling in and contributing today, and, of course, sharing your most intimate thoughts with us so freely. That's a great honor for us that you feel comfortable enough to open up this way. Thank you. Thank you very much.
And I thank you, Eutrice. Have a wonderful day. Let somebody else get on. I'm going back to listening. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Nikki from the Bronx, you're on the air.
Oh,
you're on the air.
Hi.
Hello. For some reason, you're cracking up a bit, and you're going in and out.
Oh, okay. You hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Wow. What that gentleman had to say is a lot about how I feel deep down inside. I really felt his sincerity. And what I wanted to say is that seven-letter word, or eight if you say American, the can never evolved for all of us. We haven't evolved. Like the gentleman said, my hair stand up. So much pain, so much division, so much behind our backs and in front of our faces. And look at last year, I mean, and then underneath that, other things are going on that continue to hurt us. So when I even meet people, you know, I'm Puerto Rican, it's like they think that word American or America is going to shield them, and it never does. And I can meet all kinds of people, and when they ask me where I'm from, I probably say I was born here, but I'm Puerto Rican. And so you're American, like they want me to purposely say that instead of just getting to know me. And when I ask them right away, oh, I'm American, I'm from Brooklyn. And I said, okay, go a little deeper than that. What do you mean? I said, your parents. It's like, you know, a denial of one's true self, you know, when you hide underneath this banner. My best friend once told me, you know, when you carry your flag, Puerto Rican, Jamaica, you feel proud. And he says, you know, I think there should be just one flag, the human flag. And now I know what he meant, because, yes, you definitely could be proud. But how far do we go with our symbolism, no matter what? So I just feel like this word carries too much weight, and it's an empty void. You know, it hasn't evolved. And it's kept us from evolving and kept us from seeing each other. That's what I feel when I hear that word.
So how do we see each other?
Well, first of all, by having a blank slate, by being open to and being honest. The only way we get past the hurt and the fear is about being honest. Like, I understand that lady before, how fearful she is, but we can't get paralyzed. You know, because then the control will take over. You know, we people that you find common ground, and then you have to have a plan of action and know that together we are, you know, stronger than being in your own little corner, being scared. You know, this is, I think also that's what powerful people want. They want you to feel paralyzed. It's always been the case. They want to create division. If it's not an immigrant, it's another thing. That's all division. Unvaccinated. No, they want to call us anti-vaxxers, which is not true. I'm anti you telling me what to do with my body, and then I have to live with the result, you know. And it's the framing of things. You know, if we can just be open to maybe a new frame, you know, evolving, you know, letting go of our preconditioning, you know. And by the way, Utrice, I love you. I used to listen to you on DAI, and I'm glad you're doing well.
I'm thankful to hear that. Thank you so much. Well, that might be the last comment for the day, because we're out of time. I thank you so much, Nikki, for calling in and sharing your very precious thoughts with us. I thank everybody for doing the same thing. This is how we teach each other, and we get a sense that even though, and I want you to do this little exercise today, look at the news and see what they tell us the news is. See if it has even the remotest connection to what it is we have been talking about here. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk again tomorrow. Bye-bye.